I'll make a shoehorn out of your shin. I'll make a lampshade of durable skin. No, don't you know that I'm always feeling able when I'm sitting home and I'm carving out your navel. I'm just a sitting here carving out your navel. When will I realize that this skin I'm in, hey, it isn't mine? And when will the kill be too much meat for me to hide?
Hello, ghouls and boys, and guess what day it is? It's Wednesday, and that means Midnight Munster is back on track. Midnight Munster is a podcast from CinemaFromage.com, hosted by myself, Casey Criswell, and my lovely wife, Colleen Criswell. And this week, we are back in full force. We're going to be bringing two movies for you. We have the last 8 films to die for, After Dark Film Fest Crazy Eights, as well as 2005's Bloodshed. So, stick around, check that out. We hope you enjoy. In the meantime, be sure to check out our website at www.cinemafromage.com, where we post reviews nearly every day for all sorts of horror, not all of them that are associated with this podcast, so check it out. We like to have you around. We've got forums now over at popsyndicate.com. Just be sure to visit www.popsyndicate.com, hit the forums link at the top, and let us know. There's also a lot of other good shows with forums out there, so check them all out. They're worth it. Now, if you have any questions, suggestions, or anything like that for us here at Midnight Munster, you can reach us at cinemafromage@gmail.com. Again, that's cinemafromage@gmail.com, or we've got voicemail now at 206-339-9459. Again, that's 206-339-9459. So hang on to your butts, folks. We're going to get going here in just a second. I would like to remind you, if you like the show, or even if you don't like it, go out and leave us a review on iTunes.com. That helps us greatly bring in more listeners. And we're a big, happy family, so the more, the merrier. In the meantime, be sure to check out some of the other good horror casts out there that are going on. We have the Bloody Good Horror Podcast, which I myself am a co-host on, as well as the Mail Order Zombie, which is a good friend of the show, and the Cryptographic Podcast for your comic book fix. Brian Mattis, the host of Cryptographic, is now going to be contributing some reviews every now and then on Cinema Fromage. So come check it out, folks. It's good time. And the final thing here, we've got two stores up on the site now. If you check the links, we've got a Cafe Press store for some little gugads and tchotchkes there that you might be interested in. And we also now have a new Amazon store. If you check the site at cinemafromage.com and check the sidebar, the link is to Cinema Fromage's Gouda Deals. If you haven't picked up, we got a hell of a cheese theme going here. Again, that's Cinema Fromage's Gouda Deals. And out there on that store, you're going to find links to any of the movies that we cover here on Cinema Fromage and the Midnight Munster podcast. They're all out there. So if you hear us talk about a movie and you think you like it, be sure to check out the store, because that allows us to bring better and more shows to you. So here we go, folks. We're going to jump into the show here right now. So hold on to your butts and have a good time.
I cannot outrun the memories that torment my soul. It's my final request that you acknowledge the past we've shared together.
Let's remember it was his final wish.
In the middle of nowhere to dig a bunch of rotten toys.
He said that there was a box here somewhere that he wanted us all to open together.
Who's that?
That's me.
I'm gonna have a nightmare.
What's wrong?
Windows are all locked and we can't find a door that leads to the outside.
What are we doing on this wall?
He places it drilled in his skull.
We lived here in this room.
They were experimenting on us.
20 years has slipped through our fingers.
Ah!
2007 brought us a new After Dark Horror Fest, 8 films to die for. One of those 8 films was 2006's Crazy Eights, directed by James K. Jones, written by Dan DeLuca and James K. Jones. This movie has a somewhat known cast here. We have Dina Meyer, who you'd recognize from Starship Troopers, Birds of Prey, and the like.
And the Saw movies.
And the Saw movies, of course. Tracy Lords, who you know from porn. Dan DeLuca, who wrote this film. Frank Whaley, we know from Vacancy.
George Newbern, who, if those of you who ever watched Friends, was Rachel's boyfriend for a while.
I do look familiar from somewhere. And then finally, the last of the known quantities here is Gabriel Anwar, who is now starring alongside Bruce Campbell in Burn Notice. So in Crazy Eights, we have a group of friends. Let's see, I believe it's 6 friends get together. One of their friends has died. They've been longtime friends. They go to the funeral. As they all gather up, they start going through the dead friend's possessions and start to find clues of something from the past that none of them really remember, but it's in his will that their last request is to go to this barn out in the country to find this little treasure map thing that the treasure map that he has left them leads to. So they all head out.
After, you know, voicing the opinion that none of them really wanted to do this, they all considered it a waste of time. And, you know, honestly, I'd agree.
Yes. They did consider it a waste of time, but at the same time, it was his last wish, so out they go. So they head to the farm where this barn is. They find a chest up there that has a bunch of old toys in it, and they start rooting through, and they start to get vague recollections of toys. The toys that are in the box, and as they're trying to get the box outside, they drop it and find there's a corpse in the bottom. So they go to take off. They're going to leave the corpse rotting in the middle of the yard now. And they take off to leave, and they keep finding themselves running in circles. And so they stop at this small abandoned house out in the middle of the country. And from there, the excitement and mystery just ramps up as they go to hole up in the house.
The house is very much like the TARDIS. It is much bigger on the inside.
Yes, for you Doctor Who fans out there. It is very much like a TARDIS. As they get to the house, on the outside, it looks like a basic house. They go to find their way inside, and one of the friends falls and breaks his leg going into the basement. And eventually, they somehow realize that there's still power running to the house. Never mind the fact that it's condemned, and they turn the power on, and then they start to wander about.
Well, they all go to try to help the friend, and they get locked in the cellar.
Right, something locks them in, and so they take off through the basement trying to find their way out, and they find themselves in an old hospital. Once in the hospital, they start to uncover more and more clues that eventually leads them to realize that they were once patients at this hospital.
Yes. Well, the very beginning of the movie, it tells you that...
Yes, the very beginning of the movie, we got text that states that back in the 50s through 70s, I think, that families would give their kids up to hospitals for behavioral experiments.
Mm-hmm.
And many of the parents would never see these kids again. The kids would be dropped off, the parents would be paid a fee, and that was the last they've seen of them. And they do all sorts of crazy experiments on them. These kids were one such, and they're supposedly littered all over the South. And that leads to a large part of it. Now, these folks, other than the fact that they gave us the setting for this hospital and where they came from, didn't really play into jack shit as far as the movie goes. And outside of some creepy atmosphere that is pretty much a given in any old abandoned medical facility, there's not a whole lot in this movie to make it scary.
Yeah, I mean, they had a lot that they could have worked with. The acting, I mean, they had some really decent actors, and they pulled it off, and they could have pulled off something a lot better.
Well, and to throw this in here, too, to help drive this point home, this movie's only an hour and 18 minutes long. This is something we've run into in the last... This is our third episode now, a movie that's under an hour and 20 minutes for a feature-length flick. This one's only an hour and 18 minutes, and there's so much more they could have done with this movie, and it would have been really good, because the basic plot of the story is solid.
Well, yeah, but one thing, though, is that this is a pretty much a revenge flick. We know that the ghost of this little girl is coming back for revenge.
Which is the corpse in the chest.
The corpse in the chest. They have no clue. They have no memory of this place, no memory of their past. They just know that they've been friends for 20 years. They're in their 30s now. They've all gone on with their lives. They needed to, other than at the very beginning where they gave us little brief glimpses into the lives of these people, we have absolutely no idea who these people are.
Right.
We could care less about them.
And they could have... They had room in this movie to do so. They could have stretched it out an extra 20 minutes, 25 minutes, and expanded on this backstory of them and show us these kids, these people when they were kids, like you said, so that we actually get some commiseration.
A background,
so we actually feel sorry for them, so we actually know what happened to them. Our only glimpse of what's happened to them as far as these, you know, they set us up for these big, awful experiments that are conducted on these kids, and the only sign of what we get of the actual experiments is they show us some medical equipment.
Yeah.
And that's it. You have no idea what they do with it.
Right. I mean, and then, you know, like in one of the deaths, it kind of flashes something that looks like possibly some sort of experiment as the person's dying. Other than that, though, I mean, I'll give the deaths this. The deaths were interesting, but I think they would have been more interesting if we understood them.
Well, because, no, a couple of the deaths were interesting.
Well, because of the fact that this is a revenge film.
Right.
Usually with revenge films, we have an understanding of what these people did, and their deaths usually fit in with the way that the person was mistreated or the way that the person had died. That is a typical thing with a revenge film.
Well, the reason I state that, though, is we only get to see one or two of the actual deaths.
Right.
And one of them is an accident not involving the ghost.
Right.
And now there's another thing, like, for going on from what you're talking about, like when Tracy Lords first gets attacked by this ghost, her eyes are gouged out. You would think there'd be a reason there.
Right.
Other than the fact that they got through the door because the ghost is holding the door shut, and then all of a sudden they get in. So the ghost had obviously done what it needed to do. You'd think there's a reason. Same thing with when Gabriel Anwar dies and the ghost says, reach inside and pull out the guilt. You would think that there's something that would lead us to this girl swallowing the guilt.
Right.
Which is part of the plot, but there was, you'd think there would be something more specific that she did as the past. We don't know.
Yeah, we don't get that, and that's what's really sad about this film. This film had great potential.
And if they would have filled in that backstory, this movie would have been a hell of a lot better.
And it would be different, too, because you wouldn't be just like, oh, okay, well, somebody's running off by themselves. That means they're going to die. Blah, blah, blah. It would have given us at least a little bit of, you know,
right,
anxiety about, oh my gosh, you know, oh, that makes sense. Oh, she saw something that, you know, and that's why her eyes got gouged out. She saw something
right
that she wasn't supposed to see. That would, you know, and that whole, because I think it's that whole idea, that understanding that makes these types of films a little bit more scary. The whole idea that for every action there is a reaction, for every everything that we do, you know, karma's going to come back and bite us in the ass, and that's what the whole purpose of a revenge film is about.
Now, as Colleen stated a couple times, there's a heavy revenge element to this movie, and it definitely comes into play, but trying to stay out of completely spoiling this movie for you folks. The setup is with the ghost of somebody they knew in their past. We only find out what happens to this girl and why this ghost is around because the one friend that dies at the beginning of the movie is writing in a book, and Gabriel Anwar reads the last page of the book out loud, which, going back throughout, once you get to the end of the movie, you got to hope that you remember this brief bit of her reading the story out loud as to why what the setup is.
Well, later, George Newbern also reads it again later, paraphrases it.
It's too vague, which is a problem that could have been solved if they would have expanded this with the backstory, and it would have been such a great movie. As it is now, though, we have pacing problems. It's very slow in between the parts where the ghosts show up, and once the ghost does show up, it's kind of boring because they don't show much.
Yeah. This movie was given a MA rating, which to me, I don't understand. I could understand an R rating for this film because of the language, but there's really not much blood. Most of the way that this was shot was completely and totally washed out. You noticed, the costumes, everything was a very, you know, and I liked that effect that it gave it.
Well, yeah.
But it was washed out, so it wasn't like the bright, vibrant blood and whatnot that a TV MA would.
I gotta disagree with you that there is a lot of blood on this, but you never see the blood actually coming from the wounds. It's the aftermath of the blood all over the place, because there's blood all over the mattress, there's blood on the walls, there's blood on the floors, there's blood on the pipe. There's plenty of blood here, it's just you never see it in the actual act. It's always the aftermath.
Right.
Which, so I could see the MA rating from that, just because there's a lot of it.
Well, I disagree there. I think I could understand an R rating, but not, or even an NC-17 rating, but not an MA rating, because there was no nudity, there was no, I mean, other than the vulgar language, you don't see the deaths, and usually that's where, what the violence of seeing someone get killed, that's usually where that comes in. But the aftermath usually doesn't affect, especially in the way that this was shot with the whole washout.
But if you drop down to a PG-13 rating, you can't see all the blood that we've seen in this movie.
Right, that's why I said R NC-17.
Right, but that's why they went with an MA, so there's... It's because of the blood, just because of the amount of it. Even if it doesn't show up from the wound, from what I've seen classically, it's because of even those blood pools, where as lame as it may be, that's why they end up going that route. Now,
I just still felt that there wasn't enough, in my opinion, because I like lots and lots and lots of dripping blood.
This movie would have been a hell of a lot better if we would have actually seen people dying.
Yes.
As morbid as that sounds. But, you know, we're all horror nerds here. That's what we're here for. And if we would have actually seen that, it would have been a heck of a lot better. And there's so much time to play with it, since it was only an hour and 18 minutes. That's what kills me, is why did they cut the cell themselves so short?
I don't know.
And like Colleen was saying before, with
maybe
the colors
they blew their load on hiring Tracy Lords. I don't know.
I think they'd go the other way around. As Colleen was saying before, with the colors and whatnot, the one thing that this movie does get right is the atmosphere of the movie is wonderful. There's a very dream, with the soundtrack mixed in with the washed out colors and wandering around this abandoned hospital, there is a very dreamy, haunted quality to the whole movie, to the whole atmosphere, but they don't use it.
Yeah, they didn't utilize it at all. I mean, it was there, we saw it, and it really could have played into the movie a lot more than the way it did.
Now, I don't know, though, I can't say if the director and the writers were cut short by something with the studio. I haven't done enough research here yet. I don't know if it was cut short because of that, but that's what kills this movie, is the fact that they cut it so short. It could have been so much better. IMDb listed runtime 80 minutes. It was actually 2 minutes shorter than that. That 80 minutes is counting your credits. So it's a very, very short flick, and it could have been so much better with more time.
Yeah, I agree. It just, it drug on. I think that if they would have cut out some of the aimless wandering around and given us more backstory and more understanding instead of the aimless wandering, if the writing, you know, if they would have been more in-depth in their writing, I think it would have actually pulled out a different movie, which would have been a lot better. Because they had the cast. They had the atmosphere. They had the special effects. You know, they had a storyline. But they didn't gel together at all.
Right. And they may have, and maybe it's laying on the cutting room floor. We don't know. That's the
problem. Maybe there's a director's cut. Maybe
if
it's
there's a director's cut coming down the line, I would love to see it just to see what's changed.
Maybe it was like Murder Set Pieces when we had that issue with, you know, not understanding what the hell was going on because so much stuff ended up getting cut out. Maybe that's the case here. And if it is, I want to see the full version. I would love to see, you know.
I agree. I definitely like to see the full version. So, for myself, I'm going to give Crazy 8 a I will give it a 4 out of 10 just for the effort because of the atmosphere.
I'm going to give it a 3. It just pulled way too short for anything.
There you have it, folks.
Who is that?
That's Frankie Osmond. I heard he's a lumberjack. A crazy lumberjack! Who killed his whole family.
Except for his brother. You met his brother today, Beth.
Donnie?
Yeah, the jam guy. They live up in the woods with their grandmother.
What? I thought they live alone up there. I've never seen a grandmother.
You haven't been to their house, Luke. They could have 10 grandmothers up there.
Shh, they'll hear you.
I've been up there.
Bullshit.
I was up there off-roading through the woods. Drove right up to the house. There's all these rundown sheds everywhere, and the whole place smells like dead bodies.
How do you know what dead bodies smell like?
Couldn't have been anything else.
Bullshit!
What's wrong with them?
My dad said when they were kids, they killed their whole family.
I wish I could get away with that. My sister's a biggest bitch.
The story is that the father killed the mother. Then Frankie over there killed his father, chopped up his body, and burned it.
Why would they do that?
Their grandmother told them to. People say she instigated the whole thing.
There is no grandmother. Frankie killed his dad, buried the body, and they lived up there alone for 20 years. Eating little girls.
You're all fucking drunk. They killed their family, then they were born again. And of course, Jesus makes you crazy.
Dialing back the Wayback Machine here a little bit, back to 2005, we have a serial killer release from director Jim McMahon called Bloodshed. Now, unfortunately, I don't believe it is the Jim McMahon from the World Championship Bears from back in the 80s, but it would be cooler. Bloodshed revolves around is a story that revolves around a family that lives in seclusion out in the woods outside of a small town. The legend has it that dad freaked out, killed mom, older brother decided to kill mom, or kill dad in mom's defense, and it was all orchestrated by grandma, so the rumors say. Now, it's older brother Frankie and younger brother Donnie that live together out in the woods, and nobody knows for sure where grandma is. They cut back and forth between scenes of them working out in the woods and the town. There is a new girl in town named Beth who has arrived and is working at the local coffee shop where Donnie happens to come in to sell his homemade jam every day. And as we go, she's got her slutty friend that works there at the coffee shop with her, whose two idiot boyfriends, you know, take her out and they all act stupid, and eventually they wind up out in the woods making out where Donnie sees them, and everybody gets in a fight and takes off, and then next thing you know is a whore girl is stuck in the woods by herself. She sees Donnie in the woods, gets scared and starts to run, and then eventually falls and kills herself on accident. To which Donnie and Frankie have to cover up the death, and thus the meat of our story for 2005's Bloodshed.
What cracks me up is that with this movie, we have a bunch of vanilla characters, except for, I thought, the only character that actually really stood out was Donnie.
Donnie was good, and even his brother, Frankie, to an extent, was good.
But other than that, all the other characters in this film are pretty much forgettable.
Yes, they're very much forgettable. And the sad thing here is this movie's got a decent premise for the plot.
Yes.
It's got a decent story. It's a little bit different in the fact of your crazy redneck family and not necessarily being as evil as everybody paints them to be.
What it is, the bottom line of the story is how far will you go to protect your family? Pretty much what he sees, Frankie sees Donnie carrying this lifeless girl and immediately is worried that Donnie's going to be blamed for her death because they are secluded and they have the whole mythology behind their family and rumors and whatnot. So what he's doing is he is just trying to protect his brother.
That's what he starts out as doing.
And
which is the basis of our movie here, because and that's what makes it interesting, because you get this crazy family that's painted to be crazy and murderous, which normally in the past means they're going to be crazy and murderous throughout the whole movie, whereas this one is Frankie's sense of duty that kicks in, and he's trying to make the best of the situation, because he also knows too that they're outsiders and the cops aren't going to listen to him.
Right. But also the whole transition as the movie progresses, Donnie starts out as a very quiet character, very introverted. He has, you know, he mumbles, he's very shy, very quiet. But it seems to me, I don't know if you noticed this or not, but it seemed to me that as the movie progressed, Donnie and Frankie's characterizations kind of got switched, where by closer, you know, from the last 20 minutes of the show, Donnie's very vocal. Donnie's doing a lot of talking, very clearly, very strong character, where and his brother starts to kind of be more going back to his caveman roots with more grunts and garbled right. talk and, you know, not thinking clearly. And I loved that whole kind of, because it happens so gradually, but then it just kind of, you know, you're looking it right in the face saying, hey, wait a minute.
Yeah. And there is, of course, too, you even get to see a scene where they actually cross paths and switch with each other out in the woods.
Mm-hmm.
Where Frankie starts to basically break down into his baser self, and Donnie starts to wisen up to his ways with the couple that were hiking in the woods.
Right.
And Donnie starts to say, no, this isn't right. Why are you getting in this trouble? While Frankie starts to become blind to the obvious.
Right. So, I mean, it was very interesting watching that. And it was just that whole progression was really beautifully done.
Right.
The rest of the movie, though, the rest of the acting just kind of, you know, fell by the wayside, I felt.
Well, while the acting was flat, our main character, other main characters in there weren't very much, which to some extent is forgivable, because they're really not the main focus of the movie. As you just pointed out, the main focus of this movie is Donnie and Frankie and their roles and their role reversal. And those two guys did a good job. I actually liked them quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
And the story here is decent because it's original, but the problem here, I think, is this movie, while it only weighs in at an hour and 20 minutes, it needs some editing and some extra stuff thrown in there to help beef it up, because by the end of it, once we saw Donnie and Frankie switch roles, it started to drag.
Right.
And it drug to where eventually it kind of fell apart at the end, because you were having a hard time paying attention just because it had slowed down to a crawl.
Right. It did, and I mean, it. One other thing that kind of bothered me through the film was, I don't know, when the whole kidnapping, the whole idea that they're trying to cover their tracks and all that, the discovery of the body in the shed, which just cracked me up because it was so reminiscent of Psycho.
And it's kind of tacked in there for no apparent reason, too.
Yeah, other than, okay.
Other than Donnie doesn't have a strong grip on reality.
He doesn't have a strong grip on reality. He, you know, it just, I don't know, the whole idea, some of the stuff that was just kind of thrown in there didn't really play too much into the story enough. I mean, had they emphasized more on the grandmother, had they emphasized more, and on top of that, you have a sheriff who is a complete and total idiot.
Yes.
And, you know, I wanted to like the sheriff. You know, he has a son who's a jackass, who he's trying to deal with. But still, you find a body in somebody's shed. You don't say, okay, well, go ahead and you take care of that business.
We're going to let you take care of burying her. We'll talk to the doctor to see about getting her a
death certificate.
Death certificate.
I'm sorry, but if, I don't care if it's, you know, who it is, grandma or not, you don't just let the body, oh, okay, well, you go ahead and take care of that. Oh, I didn't know he put her in the shed. Oh, I told him to bury her. I'm sorry, but that usually usually that's what the even if it is family, crime scene comes out and takes care of business. Apparently in small town rural, wherever the hell this place is, they don't go by that sort of procedure. And that just annoyed the hell out of me.
Well, despite his bouts of idiocy, the sheriff was likable, quite likable. He actually wasn't too bad, and some of his lines were pretty funny.
Yeah, some of his lines were. His interaction with his son.
Yes.
Who was one of the slut girl's boyfriends. I don't know if he's a boyfriend. He's the buddy that hangs around with her boyfriend.
She showed him her boobs, though.
She showed him her boobs. Yeah, not much. She didn't have much, but...
boobs is boobs.
But, yeah. Other than that, you know, they tried to play, at the beginning, tried to play up the two boys as, you know, pranksters, as people, you know, trying to goad the sheriff, that sort of thing, like to scare people. Had they played more into that, that might have been nice. However, other than the very beginning where the girl's running through the woods going, ah, someone's chasing me, and then the bar scene where they are pretty much verbally accosting poor Frankie, causing that tension there. Other than that, those two characters really did not do anything for me. I mean, yeah. Their whole little Scooby-Doo investigation there after, you know, after the girls kind of disappear, that really did not go anywhere. And had there been more involved with that, that might have been nice. That might have brought more of a serial killer element to this. I would actually think this more of a Hitchcockian type thing where you don't have, like with Psycho, where you didn't really have a huge killing spree as in Psycho. I would rank this in a Hitchcockian sense.
I could see that to an extent. Now, the thing here is, there's, like Colleen was just detailing out there, there's... The biggest fault with this movie is that there's so many times that they've hinted towards something deeper and then forgot about it and never went back to it. Which, if they would have done this, anything with the grandma's corpse, with the stuff in the bar and whatnot, if they would have actually delved deeper into these things that they hinted at, it would have been a lot fuller movie and have been a lot better for it.
Yeah, giving it a little bit more meat, a little bit more substance, a little bit more for us to digest other than, okay, these two brothers have a very solid relationship.
Right. So now, ultimately, for Bloodshed, I like this for what it is. For an indie movie, it's well-written, it's a decent plot, and it's something different. Instead of random zombie movie number 89 and whatnot. So I do like it for that. I just wish the editing would have been better. It's not one I'm necessarily going to go back and watch again, but it's worth watching once, so I'm going to give it a 5 out of 10.
I'll mirror that. I'll say 5 out of 10 also. I mean, I would really like to see more out of Jim McMahon and Michael Victor Roy, who wrote this, and Jim McMahon, who directed it. I think that, you know, they could do a lot better.
Yes.
And I would like to see more out of them. And also, I would like to see more of Christopher Childs, and who played Donnie. I liked... He did that really well.
Yeah, he did
a really
good job.
He really pulled that off, and I really applaud that. So I'd like to see more out of him. This is the only movie he's done.
And just for the record, the guy who plays Frankie's real name is Ice Mrozek. How badass can you be with a name like Ice? He's just utter badass.
Yeah, he's done a few small roles, it looks like. He's been uncredited. He's played background roles, it looks like. So, yeah, I'd like to see more out of him, too, because he really... Those two were the most solid actors in this film, and I think that both of them really, really showed that they did have some range, and I think that, you know, seeing them in more things would be nice.
Yes, definitely. They're definitely what makes the movies. So there you have it, folks. That's 2005's Bloodshed.